Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Hey, you. No, not you. You! It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A Medicare podcast that puts its pants on one leg at a time. Wondering which earbud goes where, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. My goodness gracious sakes alive. It's another exciting episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. You already know who I am because my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, just told you that I am Doug Jones, your Medicare expert. And I am pretty excited about that because although Drew is still up in Canada, being a CPA for a big law or an accounting firm in Toronto, he is has sent his mother and his father down here to Arizona to enjoy a week of warmth, sun, exercise, and frivolity. And the only thing they're going to miss out on is the warmth and the sun, because this has been like the world's worst winter weather in Arizona. In fact, you're going to hear that from Randy later on. He can't stop talking about it. But I just wanted to tell you that we're very glad to have you joining us. If you have thoughts of Medicare, and if you're looking for Medicare knowledge, and if you're hoping that your Medicare transition is going to work out smoothly for you, then I would say that you've come to the right place. I suggest that people go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and put Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023 into the search window, and you're going to have all kinds of Medicare knowledge at your fingertips. For a very reasonable price, you're going to have a magnificent hardcover book. You're going to have a paperback. You're going to have an Audible book, or you're going to have a Kindle ebook. All of those at your disposal, very reasonably priced and packed full, chock full of Medicare information. Once you absorb that information, which is going to take you a fairly short period of time, you will know more about Medicare than most of your friends and probably all of the people that live on your block. I'm watching my landscapers out there running around with their leaf blowers, hoping they don't come any closer, but it looks like this guy is hitting up. He saw a shiny bauble off in the distance, and now he's heading down the street. Okay. Oh, here he comes again. I swear I can't predict what these guys are going to do. Randy, help me out here. What am I going to do about my leaf-blowing landscapers?
We're going to scream louder than the leaf blower. I have no idea how to do that. But bottom line is, as Doug said, you know, Okay, I'm not telling you anything you guys don't already know on the podcast, but we have a bit of a posting delay. This is Thursday that we're recording, and for some reason, Doug's landscaper, my landscaper, and every landscaper in the Northern Valley of the Sun blows leaves on Thursday. I have no clue why that is.
Jeez. Yeah, we've had to start delayed, have a delayed starting time more often than not on these Thursdays when these landscapers showed up. But it's not predictable because it's every other Thursday for me, and so I forget when to expect them. But anyway.
So let's go ahead and just keep talking. We'll do the Medicare. When we get to the actual Medicare stuff, yes. we may end up having to patch that in later by the magic of Randy's editing. But let's go ahead and finish up a few things before the leaf blower starts.
Okay. One of the things I want to finish up is, weeks ago, you told me that you had a very funny story about a screwdriver. And we didn't have time on that episode to actually enjoy that story. So I was wondering if you could share it with us now.
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. It harkens back to when, I know this is going to shock people, but it harkens back to when Randy was a young, stupid 22-year-old.
As opposed to being a young, stupid 60-year-old.
Yes, yes. Very much similar. It hasn't changed a lot other than the fact that my hair has grown a lot whiter. But So anyway, I used to work for a large banking organization back in the Midwest, and we were having a company picnic. Okay. And one of the accoutrements of this company picnic was a big, and I do mean big, barrel of beer.
Oh boy. Wow.
That we were making sure that we didn't want anything to go to waste. So long story short is, over the course of the evening, we had to get another barrel of beer. Okay.
One barrel wasn't enough, huh?
One barrel was not enough. And so I was feeling no pain whatsoever. And I was actually responsible for the beer. I know that's a shock to you, Doug, but I was responsible for taking care of the beer.
And well, it sounds like poor planning on the part of the organizers.
Yes, it was. So I was standing there minding my own business, and one of the EVPs for the banking organization said, "Randy, we need more beer." Okay, well, you know, when an EVP who makes more money in a week than you ever saw in your lifetime tells you to go get more beer and hands you a big wad of cash.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Guess what do you do then?
I get more beer.
You get more beer. Yeah. Yeah. So I went to the local, I think we were actually getting it from one of our customers at the bank. He had ordered extra into his bar. I don't know whether this is legal or not, so I'm not going to name the names, but he had ordered extra barrels into his bar, and I was going down in my car, coming back with barrels of beer in my trunk.
Okay.
I don't know whether that's legal either.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. Well, here's the funny part. At least it was amazingly funny to the people that were around me. It wasn't funny to me, but on one of these trips back to the park, or I guess it was a pavilion. I don't know what it was. But anyway, on one of these trips back with a big old barrel of beer in the trunk, with the lids lashed down with rope of my 1975 Dodge Charger, I got up to the place where I needed to unload the beer, and I remembered I had a screwdriver in my back pocket.
Ooh,
of my jeans. Guess what I had done?
You probably sat in your driver's seat with the screwdriver in your pocket and poked holes in the back of the seat.
I ripped the absolutely ever-loving, you know what, out of the leather interior of my driver's seat. And everybody just thought that was the most hilarious thing they had ever seen when I got that. And that's the what I remember about the story is everybody thought that was the funniest thing they had ever seen, other than Randy.
Well, yeah, you would be the one that would not find the humor in that situation, I'm guessing. And you know something, I'm not surprised to hear it, because I know a guy who did the same thing. He painted his Corvette. I belong to a Corvette club, and this was a nice guy. He probably my age, and he died about 10 years ago of some kind of weird cancer that he got. I never would have predicted him as an early death, but he told me he did all this work on his car all winter long. He, you know, completely went through the thing and painted it and everything else, and it was beautiful. And he had a screwdriver in his back pocket, and he was squatting next to the car with his back to the car, and he stood up. And so he keyed his own car, basically.
Okay. Anyone other than the absolute party involved think that's hilarious, as did the people and the reason it was so funny, or at least additionally funny, let's say that when I got out of the car to go unload the beer, I needed help, you know, because I wasn't able to, you know, heft a barrel of beer myself.
Sure. Are we talking half barrels here?
Yeah, 55-gallon barrels.
Oh, no, 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 no. Nobody hefts 55-gallon drums out of a this would have been half barrels of beer,
okay.
I'm sure.
Okay. So anyway, as I got out of the driver's seat to bring in my crew to heft the beer, the screwdriver was still hanging out of the back of my upholstery in the driver's seat.
Ouch.
And boy, I can tell you exactly how much it cost to reupholster in 1975.
Yeah, that's probably emblazoned on your brain. Now, was this one of these Dodge Chargers? Let's see. Oh, no, 75. 75 was still a fairly good-sized car, right?
Yeah, it was very similar to the Monte in terms of size and hood length, very, very similar to the Monte Carlo.
Okay, there you go. Because I'm thinking 10 years later is when Dodge got in bed with Mitsubishi and they were making a miniature sized version of that, but they still called it a Dodge Charger. And somehow, what's his name from Texas got involved to kind of the guy that started with the Mustangs.
Carroll Shelby.
No, Carroll Shelby. There was a Shelby-ized or a Cobra-ized version, but they were using Mitsubishi four-cylinder engines and front-wheel drive and calling them Chargers. This is what the federal government did to the automotive industry in the 1980s. It was incredible. They started their dirty work in 1972. Actually, they started their dirty work in about 1967 with, what was it? It was the indicator, turn signal indicators, which I thought was a good idea. When you're going to change lanes, you just hold it down a little bit, and then it pops right back in. You don't accidentally drive down the road, leaving it, you know, blinking the whole time. But it just got worse and worse. The government took more and more liberties with the cars that Americans were driving, forcing the automakers to make all of these stupid changes in the name of safety, fuel economy, and emissions. Some of that stuff being good and some of it being completely horrible.
Well, now that you've mentioned turn signal indicators, I don't know if you spend a lot of time around a Dodge Charger in 75, but they had these little indicator things on the top of the left driver's fender and the right driver's fender, or right fender.
Sure.
And they would blink along with your turn signals.
Yep. That would tell you that you had left them on, Grammy. Right.
Now, the other interesting benefit they had, and I don't know what purpose this was supposed to solve, but if you really got it was also the left turn signal indicator was also hooked up to some sort of a vacuum sensor with your injection system. So if you really had your foot in it, I mean, that left turn signal glowed green to let you know that you were wasting gas.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I'm sure that was on your mind. I better.
My back purpose off. In life was to keep that thing orange.
Yeah. How many times you get your toes stuck in the fuel injection?
Oh my God. And you know, back in 75, what was a gallon of premium gas? What, about 32 cents, 35 cents?
It doesn't matter. It was always too expensive. We always bitched about having to pay for it, but it was certainly much less than it is now.
Oh yeah. Yep. Well, you know something? It looks like your landscaper is keeping his distance. So as nominal producer of this podcast, why don't we move forward and see if we can get into some Medicare?
Let's do that. Yeah, he's on the other side of the street right now. And so I'm hoping that I will not be burdened with the sound of his leaf blowers. I was thinking we do a lot of Medicare Advantage articles, and we do them primarily because the audience has to be warned about the dangers of Medicare Advantage, and the larger audience, the American taxpayer, should be made aware of the damage that's being done to the economy and to the treasury by Medicare Advantage plans, who are able to siphon off all kinds of money, sometimes illegally, sometimes fraudulently. And so we spend a lot of time beating up on Medicare Advantage plans, but I thought, let's take a break. Let's go back to our beloved Medicare supplement plans. Those are the plans that I recommend for most of my clients, and it is with great satisfaction. I rarely see any clients that who ask me for Medicare or Medicare supplement information and then go over to the dark side. Generally speaking, when my clients understand the pitfalls of Medicare Advantage, they stay with Medicare Supplement, and I become their agent, which is a beautiful thing. So I've got a stack of articles here, and I wrote all the titles down on Randy's checklist sheet. But let's start at the beginning with a little article, one-page article, How Much Does Medicare Supplement Cost? And I don't even know who wrote this article. I must have taken it out of a larger file. But this thing starts to it actually points to a point of confusion that some people just can't get past. And so I try to shed some light on this point of confusion as often as necessary in order to set people straight, because there are do-gooder websites out there, quasi-government sites that purport to be authorities on Medicare supplements, and I think they're very, very wrong on this point. So this little article starts out, Medicare supplements vary in rate by carrier and plan choice. Not every carrier offers all plans. And this is said by some partner in Cornerstone Insurance Group in Seattle. Policy prices for Medigap, which is another word for Medicare supplement. Policy prices for Medigap are set by the individual insurance company selling them. Companies set their premium pricing in one of three ways. Number one, community rating. The premium that you pay for a Medicare supplement policy in a community rated state is going to be the same regardless of age, regardless of sex, and regardless of location. I'm adding some to this article because they don't seem to have a clear description of community rating. But what happens with community rating is the insurance company has to pick a rate that will offer them protection against financial loss and offer them the opportunity to field a product that is reasonably priced, if not attractively priced, so that their competitors will not grab all the business away from them. If they price their product too high so that the customers look at the price and say, ah, we're going to go over to, you know, Bob Smith's insurance company because he's charging less money for the identical product, then this company is not going to sell much product. So it's a struggle for the company to pick out the rate that's going to be attractive to the new clientele, and they don't lose money on it. How might they lose money on a community rated plan? Well, they have to predict the age, the demographics, the age and the sex of the client who's going to enroll in this plan. So in community rating, typically people enrolling in the plan, if they're younger, if they're in their middle 60s, they're going to be healthier and there'll be fewer claims that the insurance company has to pay. If the people enrolling in the community rated plan are in their 80s, then the insurance company runs the risk of having higher claims to pay, and they won't make any money. In fact, they may lose money on the product and they may have to raise the rates significantly. So that's an important consideration for a company. Community rating is forced on all insurance companies in a given location. And I don't know why. It's hippies back in the 60s that thought this would be a good idea. You know, people like Ted Kennedy pushed it because it's only fair that everybody should pay the same amount. And that's not true, ladies and gentlemen. It should be a lot cheaper for younger people and more expensive for older people that pose a greater risk. All right, so that's one way that an insurance company figures out their Medicare supplement rate that they're going to offer the product to the public for. The second way is issue or entry age rated. And the description this article has is premiums are cheaper if the policy is purchased at a younger age. Premiums do not increase with age. Well, there's a faulty explanation also. And this faulty explanation is being promulgated by a lot of quasi-government advisors out there. So I'm going to correct it for you. Issue or entry age rated. When you go to the insurance company, you decide to buy their Medicare supplement. Here's the rate that it's going to cost you. You're pretty excited because as time goes by, your very attractive rate, because you're a younger person in your middle 60s, it will not increase because you're getting older. However, the unspoken part of this explanation is that the company still will have to raise the rates if they lose money on the product. So if their cost of doing business exceeds the amount of profit they're allowed to make, and I say allowed to because the government controls that too, then the rates are going to go up anyway, in spite of what they told you about the entry age or the issue age rating that their product uses. So it's a false economy. All of these insurance companies have to make a profit or else they're not going to be in business. So if they don't raise the rates because you're getting older, but they raise the rates because they're not able to operate profitably, then you're still going to get a rate increase whether you like it or not. The third method is attained age rating. And it says premiums are based on your age at the time of purchase. As you age, your premium increases. And that is the most common method because it offers the greatest protection for insurance companies. My favorite insurance company that I offer to all of my clients, not all of them take it, but it's a fantastic company. They print a chart. And if a client were to ask me, okay, I'm 65, I'm taking this product, how much is my rate likely to go up in the future based on my increasing age? Well, when they ask me that, I'm able to hand them the chart and say, here's the chart. The projected increases based on your age go up to age 80, and then they stop. They will not raise the rates anymore after that as a result of your age. However, rate increases will still happen because of what? Because of the cost of doing business. As it gets to be more expensive to treat people for medical conditions, and that's what this is, medical insurance, then it becomes more costly to insure people and the rate goes up. Now, it doesn't go up as much because you're not increasing it based on people's advancing age, but it is going up because of the fact that older people have greater, more expensive medical problems. So those three types of rating methodologies are really kind of a false sales pitch for a lot of companies. Community rating, the company is hamstrung. They have to guess as to the medical or the makeup of their clientele. Otherwise, they're either going to lose money or they're going to make a ton of money and the government's going to force them to give some of it back. Number two was issue or entry age rated. And the explanation is always that if you're 65 when you buy it, that premium is never going to go up. Well, it's not going to go up because of your age, but it's certainly going to go up because the company needs to maintain a profit. So it will go up, just not for the same reason they told you about. And the third is attained age rating, meaning that you buy the product at a certain age, and as you get older, the premium goes up because of your increased age, which represents increased risk to the company. So those are the three methods, and frankly, they're lying to you if they say that that the issue age rate is cheaper, because it's not going to be cheaper. I've had to really have that in-depth conversation with a bunch of my clients who have finally understood what I was talking about, and they've experienced it for themselves. They've said, oh yeah, I can see that that's going to be a problem if the company is not able to make a profit. So anyway, the rest of this little article, some factors may also influence your rates, include your location, your gender, I'm going to say your sex, because gender is for the language people. Sex is for the biologists, and marital status and lifestyle. Like if you smoke, it says. That's not good English, but what the heck. So Medigap plans or Medicare supplement plans are purchased through a private insurance company, and you pay a monthly premium for the policy directly to the company. These policies can be purchased from any insurance company licensed to sell one in your state, but available policies and prices will depend on your state. Medigap or Medicare supplement plans cover only one person, so married couples need to purchase separate policies. Okay, that was pretty exciting. That was like one page of script, and it took me a whole episode to get through it, Randy. What the heck happened?
Well, I told you up at the beginning, I was looking at the podcast notes and I thought, wow, We have got a full plate today, but you did an awesome job getting through it because every time you do that, I learn something. So that's a good thing because a lot of times I don't know a damn thing unless you tell me.
Well, I'm happy to share the knowledge. I'm hoping the audience feels as magnanimous about it as you do.
So I would like to post, a notice for, our next podcast. The audience should write down one of our fine writers, Dominic Regina, has sent in some stump the insurance expert questions for our next episode.
Dominic.
Oh, and they are good ones, I'm telling you. So I just thought I would warn Doug, and I know the audience is going to sign in to listen to this because they are great questions, and we always love to do stump the insurance expert. But Doug's going to have to do some serious studying tonight.
Oh boy, Dominic usually warns me about this. But he didn't warn me this time. I'm caught like a rat in a trap.
Well, if you saw these questions ahead of time, which you are not, by the way,
Yeah.
you would know why he slid them past the boss.
Oh boy, oh boy. All right. So next episode for sure then, huh?
You got it. Well, anyway, we have spent our 75 cents worth of time on Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, but there's a few things, well, pretty much just one that I always talk about that Doug doesn't sometimes get to up front, but two things. Number one is do not forget that Doug Jones is a licensed insurance expert nationwide. So, bottom line, if you've got any questions, if you want to buy some Medicare supplement plans, if you just, pretty much anything, he also handles drug plans. Call Doug because he is your expert, Doug Jones. And bottom line is you can also reach out to him at dbj at mlmmailbag.com, or you can visit our website at medicarefortheLazyMan.com. We don't have a lot the details to share with you today, but we're making some technical improvements to the website, and I think you are just going to find them awesomely cool, if I do say so myself. But if you can find some place to give us 5 stars rating on the podcast and or the book, we would be forever grateful. But in the meantime, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance expert from Oklahoma, originally, not now. He's living in the great state of Arizona up in the high altitude. I think we're up at about 12,000 feet today, Doug. And it's cold. It's cold down here, too.
Absolutely. It's cold everywhere in Arizona. What the heck?
In his fortress of solitude.
Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for joining us.